San Diego. Recovered alcoholic, my name is Damien.
Okay.
It's good to be here. Damien, congrats on the 9 years. It's awesome. Good name. Congratulations to the 90-day tokens. People will pick those up. And it's good to be here. Larry, thank you for asking me to be a service. I have a sobriety date. It's August 28th, 2012. I have a sponsor who is helping me practice the steps in all my affairs. I have a home group. It's sobriety on state and date on Thursday nights in Little Italy at 7:15. Love to have you guys come out and check it out. And I've had an experience as the result of taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't had to have a drink or a drug or really feel the way I was feeling when I came in, and that's been really good. So what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, I was pretty pathetic. I hit bottom here in San Diego. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia, originally. That was pretty cool. It was definitely the problem. That's why I left there. But I had a picture of an alcoholic, and it was my dad. I was never going to be an alcoholic. I was never going to booze or use drugs. And I didn't for a while. I didn't start drinking until my senior year of high school, which was a little later than other people. And I had a lot of identity in that. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have the X's on my hands, but I took a lot of pride in that. I didn't need to do that to, I didn't need to drink or use drugs to be miserable, you know, I could do that on my own. And I did that, and so that was a lot of fun. But when I had my first drink, all this stuff about never wanting to be like my father or never wanting to have my life, because I saw it as something before I ever started drinking as like, there's some sort of control happening, you know, and I didn't want to be controlled. You know, I've always had a problem with authority and different stuff. I'll probably talk about that a little bit, but surprise, surprise, right? But, you know, when I had my first drink, like, all that stuff went out the window. You know, the knowledge and the these philosophical and moral convictions galore, like, that I had before I took a drink completely went out the window. You know, I was hospitalized for my drinking within the first month, and I like to hit it hard, and you know, of course, I always thought it was a choice, you know. Welcome to everybody that's new. I hope that you're in some pain. I had to learn through my own experience that not wanting to drink doesn't really mean anything to me. And that was pretty scary. I had to, you know, I just had to learn that that doesn't really carry any weight, not for long at least. But, you know, so I started going after it, and, you know, I grew up in the household that I had the mom that was like, you guys are going to do all that stuff, so you should come do it here where you guys will be safe. And she was like, and here's $300, go get me this and that, you know, because I finally came around, you know, because I was like the straight edge kid, you know, and we could all embrace in those fun family activities together. And, you know, my sponsor and I, especially earlier on, you know, we talked about like the enabling stuff, and I took gross advantage of everybody that I could. And if you're an enabler, even better, because it's a lot easier. But I definitely took it. I took a lot of advantage. But you know, so I would go to school, and I wouldn't sleep in class, and I wouldn't skip. And I was like, like in the bottom, like 20 of my class of a class of like 400 people. You know, it's like I wasn't doing any of the cool. You know, it's like I wasn't getting good grades. I wasn't going and having fun all throughout high school. And you know, and when I started. When I started drinking, it was like I finally kind of like had something that I could do and have fun with the misery. You know, people would always ask me when I was younger, like, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? And, you know, and I started telling people that my father was abusive, which he wasn't, but he was a drunk, and so no one believed him. And I only really had to say that a couple times, and then never had to say anything again. And, you know, people didn't really ask me what was wrong. I didn't know how to answer that question. I've never known how to answer that question. Like, what's wrong? What's wrong? I remember feeling this overwhelming guilt that, it always sounds weird when I say it, but that I didn't deserve to feel this way. And not that I was too good and that, like, you know, I'm better than this, I shouldn't feel this way. But it's like I didn't have something that equaled the way I always felt. It's like there's got to be, you know, like maybe I was molested and don't know it. Or like, you know, maybe like whatever bad thing and then that would be why I feel this way, you know. And I just always, and there was a lot of guilt about that, you know. I don't have a reason to feel this shitty. I'm always depressed. I don't feel good. And even within the drinking, but the drinking kind of helped because it gave me the liquid courage not to be ungrateful for feeling like poop all the time, you know. And I've dropped out of a couple different community colleges. I've never done anything like I did Alcoholics Anonymous. Like me, my drinking, yeah, not really the drug use, but you know, I came here and I got after it. You know, I hit bottom in Gaslamp. I lived in Golden Hill at the time. I was close to Pathfinders. Went to a lot of meetings there when I was new. And the opportunity and the desire crossed, thank you, for me to do something different. Because I feel like I'd hit a step one, not in the words that we have it in the steps, but like I said, like I'd gotten to the point where it's like I didn't want to live the way I was living anymore. I didn't want to be drinking the way I was drinking anymore. And I never followed that up with anything else. But there was the time where, when I got sober, that the desire to do something different and then the opportunity, like somebody approached me, like the literature talks about, and told me what they did and helped me, you know, and gave me some suggestions like, you know, read this every day and get 3 service commitments like now and just like get busy and get into the work. And it saved my life, definitely. When I was a year and a half sober, I got a call from my mother back in Virginia. She had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And I called my sponsor and I told him. And, you know, we went to a meeting that morning, Saturday morning meeting. I went this morning, a white flag meeting. I love that meeting. And he was like, "You're going to be uniquely useful to somebody." Like, come on, man. Like, they said like 3 to 12 months. And it's like, you know, it was always from the beginning, like, we're going through the book so that you know how to take somebody else through the book. Like, and so you can have an experience, yes, but so that you can show other, like, that's what's going to keep your seat here. And that was the same thing. I mean, the book has a lot of promises. My favorite one is that it says that we won't be able to survive the certain low spots and trials ahead, like, if we don't do this deal. And that's, like, a pretty heavy promise for me. And I've been able to walk through some, you know, some stuff in my sobriety. I always have to remember to say, like, my mom ended up being pancreatic cancer. It's just like me. I had told this story a couple times, and I left that out. It's like, subconsciously, I still want people to feel sorry for me. You know, it was really cool to be able to go there, and I got into service, got commitments, got a home group, got a sponsor, got sponsees, and showed up and was of service to my mother for the first time in my life, which was really cool. You know, I made amends to her, but that was like a great way to be able to really give back and do something. You know, because I was the master of like the crummy, "I'm sorry," and those, no one wanted to hear those from me anymore. And, you know, today I went to a meeting this morning that one of my sponsees' secretaries, and that was really cool, and a guy from my home group back in Virginia came into town, and I got to drive around with him today and show him parts of town. He's going to be moving here. And then, you know, I got to go over to OB and read the literature with someone today, and now I get to come and, like, share a message. It's like an awesome Saturday, you know. And if it was my choice, I'd be at home, like, losing on Xbox, you know, and not doing anything to grow spiritually. It's really good to be here. If you're new, like, just really consider wanting to stop living the way you're living been enough. My drug of choice is mushrooms, right? Because I eat a ton of them, and I don't like it, and I choose not to do it anymore. So there's the choice. Like, I can't say no to the booze. And I've had to learn that experience after experience. My horror story doesn't keep me sober. The look in my mom's face when I've smashed my father's car with a sledgehammer in the middle of the night doesn't keep me sober. When I'm standing in the bathroom while I'm on a date with my pants pulled down because I've pooped my pants on a date, like that embarrassment is not going to keep me sober. You know, when the judge says United States government versus you, and my stomach jumps out of my body, like all that stuff would work for a little bit. But following it up with some work that we do here has led me to something greater than I ever knew. And I've been able to do some like really rad stuff in my sobriety. You know, the book talks about we can go anywhere free men can go. And I've been able to do some really cool stuff. In the beginning, I went on tour on my first 30 days of sobriety. Now, I don't necessarily recommend this, but I was told that it's not about shielding myself from the outside world. It's about getting in touch with something that is going to, like, help me solve my problems. And, like, very early on, it was, you know, it's like we all know where to go get drunk right now, you know, but, like, just staying away from those places wasn't going to work. And, you know, from the beginning, I've been able to go places, and I got to see the AA was a lot bigger than San Diego very early on in my sobriety. Which was very profound. You know, it's not just the guys down at the OB clubhouse. It's like people in Vegas and Seattle and all over the West Coast are like doing the same thing. And I remember I was in Vegas. I was like, how do you guys stay sober? I don't understand. Smoke inside everywhere. Drink outside everywhere. It's like people watching forever, dude. Like, good thing I didn't really go to Vegas before I got sober. I probably never would have left. But, you know, she was like, well, how do you guys stay sober in San Diego? I'm like, oh, I don't know, God, the steps, you know, I'm super new. And she's like, yeah, that's the same way we stay sober here, you know. And it was really good for me to see that, you know. It's like, this is what we do, and this is, and I've seen people all over the country do the things that we do and get awesome results, you know, happy, contented, purposeful, useful, not just like, I haven't had a drink and I want to murder, like, everyone. And then I've watched a lot of people, like I'm sure a lot of people here have, like, not do the work and blow their brains out, or drink again, or go die, or keep on coming in and out and talk about, like, well, I'm going to work out more and blah, 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 and this and that. And that hasn't been my experience yet. I just hope that I can keep busy and hopefully pass it on. Thank you again for asking me to leave.